Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. On today's show, we had a pair of blowouts Monday night. We'll take a look at how Houston and Utah took care of business on their home floors.
Who will be the next coach of the Phoenix Suns? We'll take a look at some of the candidates before previewing tonight's playoff games. It's Locked On NBA. Thank you so much for listening, for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Rommel, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRommel13.
We'll take a look at some of the leading coaching candidates for the Phoenix Suns and preview tonight's games later. But first, let's review what happened in the playoffs last night. And we'll start with Houston's 119-100 win over Minnesota. The Rockets take a 3-1 lead in the series thanks to James Harden scoring 22 of the Rockets' 50 third-quarter points. David, they just smoked the Timberwolves after a close first half.
Yeah, absolutely. At one point, I thought that Minnesota might actually be able to pull off the victory at home. They looked like they were engaged early on. They seemed like they had an answer for James Harden defensively. Jimmy Butler did a fine job of trying to limit his shots. And even Andrew Wiggins had some really good looks against Harden. But then, well, the leading candidate for the MVP just had one of his most superhuman performances. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. This is a Minnesota team that's been exposed over the last month and a half, I think, with Jimmy Butler, out of the lineup due to injury. Minnesota has looked like a pretty bad team. They barely got into the playoffs, and honestly, they just do not look like a very good team right now. I'm not sure that the Denver Nuggets would have been a better matchup against the Houston Rockets, who a lot of people think might be able to contend with the Golden State Warriors for the title. But at the same time, Minnesota does not look like a very good team. There's a lot of talk there about Tom Thibodeau not necessarily getting the most out of this team, going with a lot of older players, not using Karl-Anthony Towns effectively, going to Derrick Rose as the leading option. I mean, all these things that have not worked particularly well. And again, on a night like this, when the team just falls apart, I'm not sure if there are any changes coming, but it looks like there are definitely some necessary, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and you mentioned how the team was kind of exposed when Jimmy Butler was injured, and even with Butler coming back and playing pretty well, during the playoffs, it really hasn't helped Minnesota all that much. Now, I'll give them this. This is a really bad matchup for them. Houston is just a tough matchup specifically for them, just because I feel like the Timberwolves are just like one or two wing defenders short of being able to guard Houston's four-out offense.
Yeah.
Guys like Crawford aren't, Derrick Rose, guys like that aren't necessarily great defenders, I think would be an understatement. Yeah. So I think that hurts them. But look, they've won a game in this series. It was a close first half. And there was a point when I thought that the fatigue that has historically plagued James Harden in the playoffs had returned. He didn't shoot well in the last two games of this series. And in the first half, he was settling for a lot of jumpers, especially there was a number of occasions when Karl-Anthony Towns was switched onto him. He was settling for those threes instead of just going right by him. Right. But then he went off for 22 points in the third quarter. He did a much better job of getting to the rim. He worked himself out of that funk. And as long as Harden is playing like that second half, James Harden, Houston can be as good as they were in the regular season when they got the top seed in the Western Conference and people thought that they were a credible competitor to the Warriors in the West.
Well, I think there's a difference between this team and that past team. They got some nice offense early on from Trevor Ariza. He looked like he had a pretty good game. He finished with 15 points and 4 of 10 shooting, so he started off the night particularly hot. And Chris Paul, finished with 25 points, so he's another guy who can create offense for others. So it's not so much on James, on Harden, that is, to initiate offense and create offense for himself. He can be relegated into a catch-and-shoot role. He can do what he does. He has that deadly step back. That's always going to be part of his arsenal. But he doesn't have to carry the load so singularly as he has in the past. He has other players that can, and I think this is a better team. Even Clint Capella, I mean, he had a pretty strong showing, too, with 14 points and 6 of 11 shooting. Another guy that can dive to the rim, create offense there, and kind of help extend the lead. So this is a deadly Houston team when they're fully engaged. You're absolutely right. I think their legitimacy as far as a title contender is pretty well established. You know, their defense has improved. Their offense is clearly top-notch, historically good. It's going to be an interesting matchup for them later on in the playoffs.
Especially if and when they get Luke Mbamute back. He's going to be huge. And they've got at least another series before they have to worry about that, right? Because I think they could probably win in the second round, though it's going to be tough. But if they're going to beat the Warriors, they're going to need that guy.
On the flip side of that, though, is Minnesota done? Like, I mean, I don't know that they can come back and win another game, right?
No, this is a five-game series, I think, right? Yeah. I mean, Houston, as close as that first half was, I thought Houston just missed a bunch of open threes. And they just – Harden and the rest of the guys outside of Ariza, who was the only guy hitting threes in that first half the rest of that team just started making their open threes, but Minnesota has given up open threes the entire game. I mean, that defense is porous. Taj Gibson's not somebody that could be playing major minutes, and he has to, because their defensive rating is even worse when Taj Gibson's not on the floor. Right. So
yeah, and the irony of this is that everybody thinks a Tom Thibodeau-led team is going to be a top defensive team, and in fact, they were actually pretty good offensively and not so good defensively. So his reputation hasn't lived up to it this season, and I'm not sure that there's a fix at this point.
It sounds like you think he's done.
Well, the scuttle about, you know, the team is that people are just done with him. Like, the team seems like they're not responding to him. You know, obviously, he hasn't learned. You know, we had a nice narrative going about Thibodeau taking that year off and visiting with Popovich and visiting with Steve Kerr and going from team to team and kind of, you know, gleaming what he could about how he could improve as a coach. He took that and basically wiped his butt with it and did absolutely what he did in Chicago. He ran his guy. He's running his guys to the ground. And right now,
Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson together all the time. I mean, he's just trying to relive those Chicago Bulls teams that never really won anything.
Yeah, Kirk Heinrich is waiting by the phone saying, "I'm still available, coach. Call me up."
All right, let's move on to our next game over here. So the Rockets, they take a 3-1 lead in their series. Utah did the same thing against Oklahoma City. In the second blowout of the night, the Jazz beat the Thunder 113-96. Donovan Mitchell had 33 points. Joe Ingles, he had 20 points. He impacted the game on both ends, and the Jazz take a 3-1 lead in their series.
The second chippiest series in the NBA playoffs this year. I mean, second to Philadelphia and Miami. This has been great. And I mean, for those of you listening who haven't really appreciated Joe Ingles this season, he is phenomenal. And not only that, but he's completely in the head of Paul George. I have never seen anything like that. Like, Paul George is absolutely a very good player. I know you're not as high on him as I am.
But I think he's having his best season of his career this year.
That's fair. And I mean, you could probably argue that too. I mean, although he had some pretty good years in Indiana, no doubt. But Ingles has completely... After the first game of Paul George being proclaimed Playoff P, the most ridiculous nickname in the world, Ingles has completely mitigated him. He's just locked him down. And not only that, but his offense is rolling. His defense has been great and annoying. He just has a way of getting under Paul George's skin. And we saw a technical assist. He's pushed off a number of times. He does, you know, he's getting the Utah crowd has been very good about yelling push off P now.
I'm glad you brought that up because we talk a lot about coaching adjustments in the playoffs, right? About how it's so important not only to make the adjustments, but to make the adjustments quick. Not even game to game, but intergame, in the middle of the game, right?
Yeah.
The adjustment by the Utah Jazz fans has been incredible. I mean, nobody in Utah expected to start chanting push off P when this series started, but Paul George comes out after that first game, gives himself the nickname Playoff P. And what an adjustment by the Jazz fan base to immediately come up with push off P, and they chant it as a crowd. And it's been one of the Utah Jazz fans at that arena and Joe Ingles has been among the best duos in the NBA playoffs right now, because that combination is absolutely, you're right, gotten into Paul George's head. The Thunder came out in this game with, I thought, more energy. They were more physical, especially Paul George and Russell Westbrook on the defensive end.
Right.
We know that Westbrook wanted to shut down Ricky Rubio. Yes. And they led after that first quarter, but Utah flipped it on them. They matched their intensity after that. Eventually, the Thunder's physicality turned into recklessness. I mean, that's been the Russell Westbrook experience his whole career, right? And
absolutely.
And the team has taken on that identity. It felt like the Thunder lost focus. As the game went along, they gave up a bunch of open threes to Joe Ingles and the other guys. They seemed more concerned about bullying the Jazz than beating them.
Mm-hmm.
David Locke tweeted at one point that he thinks that it never crossed Westbrook and George's minds that they could lose to the Jazz. And I have to agree with them. It feels like they've unraveled completely.
Well, the narrative about them all year long was that they knew how to beat big teams. They knew how to beat the best of the best. You know, they had a pretty good record against Houston, Golden State, Boston, and other teams in the Eastern Conference. And so they expected to be able to coalesce at just the right time and be the perfect playoff unit with their big three, etc. But Carmelo Anthony has been disastrous. Westbrook is, you know, erratic as a shooter. Paul George, again, not as good as Joe Ingles in this series. And they're taking bad shots. They're not making a whole heck of a lot. They've been very inefficient. I mean, I think you could argue, as big as those three names are, Steven Adams has probably been Oklahoma City's best player, at least more consistent player.
And in this series?
Yeah, in the series.
Yes.
And he doesn't create offense for himself. He dives to the rim. He has putbacks, et cetera. But he's not like a guy that you can just give the ball to 30 times a game and have him save your season. So at this point, Oklahoma City's falling apart. You know, I like Billy Donovan personally, but I've got to be honest with you. I don't see him having much control over this team. Like, he should have early on in this year sat down Carmelo Anthony, future Hall of Famer, and said, look, buddy, if you're going to be shooting 4 of 15, 4 of 18 on every other night, I need you to come off the bench and maybe provide a little bit better offense.
I mean, I feel like a lot of coaches have probably had to do that with Melo, and it's tough. That's a hard situation for him to be in.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of blame Westbrook in this game, to be honest. And yeah. I know it's I'm not trying to take the easy way out. Just blame the best player, right? Even though I think Paul George is the Thunder's best player, but he is the leader of this team. And there were a number of occasions where he seemed, and I credit like Kenny Smith for pointing this out on the TNT halftime show. He was more concerned with limiting Ricky Rubio's 3-point shooting than actually playing team defense and working on help defense and minding the gaps on pick and rolls and stuff like that. He just didn't want Rubio to have more points in him. And that, I think, it put the Thunder's defense in a bind. A lot of people had to make up for his mistakes. And the Thunder just, as a team, did not play. I mean, they gave up 113 points to a Utah Jazz team that typically does not score that many points. So, how much do you think this is a 5-game series? Do you think this is it? For Oklahoma?
No, I think they find a way to come back and win it another game on their home floor. I think they play better at home. I think they'll be encouraged there by their home fans. And Westbrook will be a little bit more in control. I think, obviously he lets emotions get the best of him far too often. I think he was on a mission to play defense for the first time all series, knowing that, Ricky Rubio definitely got the better of him. And that's probably why he picked up foul trouble so early, is that he was playing defense for the first time. That fourth foul was pretty questionable. He picked up 4 fouls in the first half, and that fourth foul with about 2 minutes left in the first half, pretty questionable.
I don't know. Mitt Romney seemed to agree with it.
Yeah, well, I don't agree with a lot of Mitt Romney things. So.
Look, if the Thunder end up with a first-round exit, Paul George's stay in Oklahoma could be pretty short-lived. He might be on it packing his bags for L.A. We'll look at a pair of stars that could also break up next. But first, quick reminder to make sure that you're subscribed to Locked On NBA to get the podcast every day. Think of it as your bite-sized briefing for the most important stories around the league. And keep it here for daily updates on everything going on in the NBA playoffs. So subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day. We'll take a look at a pair of possible elimination games happening tonight later on, but let's look at a team that has already been eliminated, the Portland Trailblazers. After getting swept by the Pelicans in the first round, a lot of people are wondering if it's time to break up that backcourt of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. David, do you think we've seen enough?
No, I don't, honestly. I know that it's, as CJ McCollum said, a nice narrative about these two players, and there is undoubtedly some overlap regarding their skill sets. They both shoot from the perimeter. They're creating a lot of offense for Portland. Portland's offense struggled for most of the year, even as their defense was much improved this season. But I think the problem is not getting enough offense from other positions. In today's league, where you have a team like Houston that can spread the floor and create offense from a number of positions, or you have guys like, Nikola Jokic in Denver and others that create plays for others from the center position, I don't think that Portland has any of that. You know, they're mostly catch and shoot guys. Nurkic is limited in what he can do. He's got somewhat of a back to basket game, but other than that, they're not getting enough offense from their wing positions. They've got two really good guards, and that's about it. So, if Portland has a chance to contend in this really deep Western Conference, it's going to be if they acquire other players at the forward positions in the front court to help bolster Lillard and McCollum, who I think are a good pair.
Yeah, Evan Turner, they kind of signed with that idea of being that third playmaker, and he hasn't been close to that. Shabazz Napier has been the closest thing that they've had in the last couple of years to that. Another guard, right? And their net rating is pretty good when Napier, Lillard, and McCollum play on the floor together. But it's just, you can't do that in the playoffs. It's not maintain. You can't maintain that and play some semblance of a defense at the same time. Look, I mean, I don't think the problem is Lillard and McCollum, but if you're talking about improving the team, this is a team that just is one of the highest paid teams in the league. They don't have any cap space. Nurkic could walk, and they're not going to have any money to replace him. I mean, they probably got more out of Zach Collins in the playoffs than they did Nurkic, and they like what they've seen out of him, the young rookie from Gonzaga. They like what they got out of him, and you hope that you can get some natural internal development there. Killed Swanigan, who they drafted, but he's not a starter. And look, they get guys like Pat Connaughton, who you get on the fringes, but
he's a free agent too, though.
And he's a free agent too, as well. But if you keep making those fringe type of moves that sort of help on a season-to-season basis, you could probably maintain what they're doing right now, right? And this is a team that only won, I think, three more games than the ninth place team in the West, right? But we keep looking at that number three seed and say, oh, they should have been so much better, but like they weren't that much better than even the eighth seed, let alone the Pelicans who they lost to. So I don't think the problem is Lillard and McCollum. I don't think you have to break them up, but if there is a move to improve this team, the only way to do it might be by trading McCollum, because they just don't have much value outside of those two guys on this roster. Like, you're not going to be able to package Evan Turner and Zach Collins together and get another all-star player. You know what I mean?
What's R.C. Buford's number? I mean, can they call him?
Yeah, I mean, look, McCollum for Kawhi, if the Spurs are interested. I think that I've been reluctant to agree with people that they need to break it up, and I'm still not there yet. But it depends on the offer that they get. I mean, if there's teams are going to call, right? If we believe all the reports, teams are going to call. And if somebody offers a really great, I don't like Kevin Love's fit. I think there's been a lot of chatter about a Kevin Love for McCollum swap. I don't like Love's fit in Portland. They need a defensive minded wing who can hit threes. They need somebody to replace McCollum as a scoring guard, as an off guard next to Lillard. And they probably need another good young player or draft pick or something to go along with it.
You know, Lillard's exit interview was, he talked about, he made a comparison to those early Golden State teams from a few seasons back before they, turned it up a notch when they had, their guards there, Klay Thompson. I guess he was talking about Monte Ellis as well.
Yeah.
But, in addition, of course, to Steph Curry, and that they made some fringe moves like you talked about to help bolster it. But I think a lot of people have looked at what really helped unlock Golden State's potential was the acquisition of a Draymond Green, a guy who does so much for them on defense, but also offensively creates position, helps you go small, changes. He changed the NBA. I mean, we're talking about small ball lineups. Although they predated Green's impact in the NBA, I think he certainly had a huge change and huge impact and making that seem like a viable form of offense. And so that's what they're missing, is somebody who can be a versatile playmaker in the front court. They just don't have anybody,
Yeah, they need somebody to pop like Green did. And look, maybe that's Zach Collins, because nobody expected Green to pop the way he did. That's why he's the second rounder. Right? Yeah, I mean, he's not going to be Draymond Green, but maybe he could pop in another way. Maybe he could turn into an all-star player. I mean, I don't think he can, but that's essentially what they're hoping for, whether it's Zach Collins or Caleb Swanigan or whoever they draft this year. Maybe they acquire somebody like that. But you're right. He's making that comparison to that young Warriors team that had Steph and Klay Thompson. But if maybe Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum are Steph and Klay Thompson, or maybe they're Steph and Monte Ellis, and you got to break up that duo in order to make the next step. I don't know. I'm with you. I'm not ready to do it yet, but we'll see what they do in Portland.
Yeah.
Let's move on over to another Western Conference team. The Phoenix Suns are without a head coach. And they've got a number of coaching candidates. Add Jason Kidd and Vinny Del Negro to the list, David. They've got a bunch of them. Everybody from David Fizdale to David Blatt have been linked to this. Jay Triano, Igor Kokoskov, Utah Jazz assistant. Steve Clifford recently relieved by the Hornets. Kevin McHale, former Rockets coach. James Borrego, Frank Vogel, who was just fired by Orlando. All these guys. Ties to the Suns. I mean, look, if you have coach in your job title, the Phoenix Suns are going to consider you for their vacant head coaching opening. Do you have a favorite out of this list, David?
Do I have a favorite? Yes, but for all the wrong reasons. I want them to hire Jason Kidd. I think he's a terrible coach. I think he's a terrible person. I'm not a big fan of his dealings with the media, but I don't think the way he deals with his team. We've heard too many stories from that Milwaukee Bucks locker room, and even before that, and how he was Brooklyn. Able to handle the Brooklyn Nets locker. He's just the type of coach that tries to create chaos there and see who rises to the top. And to me, that's not the kind of team building that I would prefer out of a coach. I understand that he's coming from a perspective of a former player where he's trying to see who's got the guts or who's got that kind of killer edge and mentality to help lead a team. But that's not necessarily the best thing for a Phoenix team that's really has so much.
Wait, so hold on. You just said that you want him to be. I asked you who the favorite was, and you're just crapping on Jason Kidd right now.
Yes, I want him to be the favorite there because he'll create chaos, and that's fun for me to watch as somebody who doesn't care about the Phoenix Suns.
As an unbiased bystander. Want for entertainment purposes. Okay.
Yes. As a member of the NBA media, I just want to see the chaos swirl, and then finally, when it all comes crashing down, for him to never get hired by the NBA again.
He has a home in Phoenix, right?
Yes, there it is. So hopefully people will start throwing things at that home.
That's cruel. That's very cruel. And I think that all the Suns fans are listening right now.
Team Petty against Coach
Very
Kidd.
Much hashtag Team Petty. I'm going to try to help the Suns. I'm going to go the other way on this, surprisingly enough.
I guess that's an option, too.
I think that the... And they should hire David Blatt. Just kidding. I think the problem with Kidd, right, and I think there are a number of Suns fans who probably remember Jason Kidd as a player, and they say, oh, that would be kind of cool to have him as a head coach.
I haven't seen any.
Jason Kidd... Okay, I was guessing. I'm not on Suns Twitter. But, look, I think Kidd... He can get a team to a level. Yes. Whatever that means, he has done a decent job in Brooklyn and Milwaukee of taking young guys and teaching them something and getting them better. Like, he has done that at two different places. That said, he is not a culture builder, and that is what Phoenix needs desperately. They desperately need somebody to build a culture there. And I look at a guy like David Fizdale, who was part of the hashtag culture with the Miami Heat, and he tried to do that in Memphis but ran into a brick wall in the shape of Marc Gasol and ended up getting his behind canned because players come before coaches in the NBA. In Phoenix, they don't have a veteran like that. And I don't think they don't have a veteran stuck in his ways. I think Devin Booker is obviously the star there. He is their franchise player right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's been in the league so long to know yet what he wants and what he doesn't want. I think Fizdale can walk in there and change things and maybe bring a culture there. So I like Fizdale for that reason, because he's known in league circles as a guy who can do that, who relates to players. Young players specifically relate to him, and the Suns have a whole bunch of those. They're the youngest team in the league. So I think Fizdale would be the best option there. I think the Suns would hire Fizdale in a second if he was game. That's the question, though, is if Fizdale can get a better job. I think he would take it. But if I'm the Suns, I'm calling up Fizdale right now.
Yeah, so. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I like Fizdale as a coach. I think that's going to – I don't know if he's necessarily – I mean, I guess he could get the most out of those young players. He didn't really have the opportunity to develop that kind of – we haven't seen him develop players like that other than his work as an assistant in Miami. But as a head coach, we didn't get a chance to see that because obviously Memphis was a veteran-laden team. But it's going to be an interesting option for Phoenix if you can go in there and, like you said, build some culture, because this is a team that's been floundering for years.
Next up, we'll preview tonight's playoff games, but first, don't forget that in addition to the daily Locked On NBA show, the Locked On Podcast Network also has a daily show for your favorite NBA team. So go ahead and subscribe to your team's channel on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. By subscribing to both Locked On NBA and your favorite team's show, you'll be covered with everything that you need to know. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We've got three games five tonight, David, including two possible elimination games. But let's start with Milwaukee and Boston, who are tied at two games apiece, with each team winning their home games. As this series returns to Boston, who has the edge, David?
I still think it's the Celtics, to be honest with you. I think Brad Stevens deserves all the credit in the world for getting the most of his players. Fighting through injury, getting them to play as a cohesive unit. And although Milwaukee has looked particularly good over the last two games, I still think that there's enough holes there that Boston can figure out and learn how to exploit and continue exploiting the way they did in the first two games of the series. I mean, look, Milwaukee might have more talent, questionably at this point, at least top tier talent, and guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo and Eric Bledsoe. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Boston's the better team. So I think the Celtics find a way to win at home again and kind of reclaim the edge that Milwaukee was able to get back in at their home court.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. We should mention Marcus Smart upgraded to questionable for that game. So
he'll
still
play,
chances are he
can,
won't
right?
play. Yeah. But yeah. I think he'll play that if he can, but we'll see. But to me, the guard that we have to pay attention to is Terry Three Sticks, who struggled on the road in Milwaukee, but had two 23-point performances at home in Boston. And we know this story about role players. Typically, they perform better at home. And Rozier, I mean, as much as Danny Ainge doesn't want to admit it, is at this point a role player. And if he can lead that offense and get them going, and then you're getting more contributions from Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and those guys. Look, this Boston was in that game in the last game. They could have been up 3-1. Right, it came down to the last shot. They could have just as easily been up 3-1 in the series. I like their chances being back in Boston, getting more from Rozier. I think if you're Milwaukee, you're hoping that Thon Shotmaker can continue to perform the way he did when the Bucks were at home in Milwaukee, right? Because he was the flip side of Terry Rozier. Like he was the role player stepping up for Milwaukee. If he can kind of still be the answer at center for the Bucks, I think that changes a lot of things for them as far as spacing the floor, creating more space for Giannis to get to the rim. As long as he's knocking down those threes, he adds a whole other element to that team that could be really dangerous.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to look out for. But, you know, in Boston, on their home floor, they'll probably get the friendly whistle, and a guy like Thon McCurr, is probably going to get into a lot of foul trouble. He's not going to They're not going to allow him to be as aggressive as he was back home in Milwaukee.
Let's go into our next game, Miami and Philadelphia. The 76ers lead 3-1 in that series and seem to be taking control, I think it's safe to say, yes, of that series there. The 76ers are outscoring the Heat by 11.9 points per 100 possessions when Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are on the court. Embiid's return has absolutely flipped this series.
Yeah, for listeners who want to hear more in-depth coverage of this particular matchup, they should check us out on Locked On Heat, where we break down and preview Game 5 for tomorrow's performance. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. Embiid has made a huge difference for Philadelphia. And not only that, but Miami has a couple of injury issues that might impact their defense, which has been pretty top-notch. A guy like Josh Richardson, who might be a candidate for an All-NBA defensive team, he's dealing with some shoulder issues in his left shoulder. We're not sure. He's listed as questionable at this point. He may not be available to play in Game 5, and it's, of course, a crucial game for Miami. It could hit, that their season hinges on it. Tyler Johnson, who's their starting shooting guard, has been dealing with some hand injuries as well. So, we're not quite sure what kind of lineup we're going to get out of Miami tomorrow. And they're going to need somebody to step up in their absence. If Richardson's out, I would expect somebody like Justice Winslow, maybe. You and I both talked about him. He's had a great series. He's really lived up to expectations there, played really well defensively, has created plays for others, finished well at the rim, and is shooting well from the perimeter. So he's a guy that obviously could help Miami's chances. Dwayne Wade, can Miami count on another stellar performance from Dwayne Wade as they did in games 2 and 4?
I mean, maybe, but it's not going to matter if Marco Bellinelli keeps shooting the way he has. I mean, I think if you're Philadelphia, that 3-point shot is just going down. Ben Simmons is having his way, getting to the rim and kicking out, and Joel Embiid is helping that as well as far as the way he's able to not only post up but stretch Miami's defense. It just doesn't seem like Miami has kept the last two games close for the first three quarters, and then Ben Simmons basically just takes over in the fourth, and then they'll put Simmons and Embiid on the floor together, And then that's it. That's basically all she wrote. I think the Heat can win if they find a hot hand. Maybe it's Dwayne Wade, like we saw in Game 2. I don't know that he has another one of those in him. And even if he does, they need to get contributions from other places on the roster. Because even then, it's just not sustainable. But I do think that this series is pretty much over. If Miami finds a way to win, I'll be surprised. And even if they do, a 3-1 lead is just, that's too hard to come back for.
They're prolonging.
The 76ers are just too talented. Yeah. So let's go to our last game. San Antonio, speaking of prolonging, San Antonio and Golden State, the Warriors lead 3-1 after a spirited Manu Ginobili performance extended the series, but Golden State should close this series out in Oakland. What do you think?
Yeah, it's done.
Okay. All right, cool.
I don't even know what else to say about it, to be honest with you. Look,
but at least they got another good Manu game.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, San Antonio showed some heart there, and I think you can say the same thing about Miami, to be honest with you. I've seen a lot of people kind of giving them the moral victory statue there, the moral victory trophy for their effort against Philadelphia, and you can say the same thing for San Antonio, but, I mean, they've been overmatched. This was not the San Antonio Spurs as they were supposed to be constructed, and they're doing their best to kind of match up with a very good Golden State team that I don't think has necessarily flipped the switch just yet, and is likely to do so. They're still without their best player in Steph Curry, so...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he might be back for round two. He might not, but they might not need him. Kevin Durant's been really good. Klay Thompson has been hitting a bunch of threes. This series is over. All right, well, that's all. And so is this podcast. That's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. We'll be back next Tuesday. You can find us on Locked On Heat in the meantime. John Corrales and Jake Madison got you on Locked On NBA tomorrow. Thank you for listening, and thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.